This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
This is Chris Fetters of Dogman.com, and I'm here, I guess, deep in the bowels of Alaska Airlines Arena.
Yeah.
And kind of in between the basketball court and Husky Stadium. We got kicked out of our room because UW needed it.
Coach Sheridan needed it.
Yeah, so we needed it. So that's Scott Acklin. I'm Chris Fetters. And Kim Grinnells is in travel. He's in transit right now, so unfortunately he couldn't be with us. But we're here this week kind of breaking down some of the main talking points that we've heard from not only the UW players,
yep,
and also the coaches, mm-hmm, about kind of what went wrong at ASU, and then also kind of what they're trying to fix for this weekend's homecoming game against Arizona. So I guess we'll start with the beginning of the week. We got Coach DeBoer. We got Coach, who was it, Coach Morales this week, mm-hmm, and then also Ryan Grubb. Just tell me, Scott, kind of what really resonated with you.
The biggest theme that I take from this week, and it's kind of the same as last week, is the coaches said that the players were frustrated, but they had a great mindset and ready to come in and do some work. They were really happy with what this is on Monday when we met those three. And so they said their Sunday practice was really well, you know, their walk through, the corrections they were making and things like that. The players just were ready to work. They said that the one thing that was different between UCLA and the ASU next day practice was that the players were hurt after the UCLA game, but they were mad after the ASU game and felt like they let one really get away against Arizona State. And I think everybody would agree that they felt that way, that they let one get away. The defense again struggled, and we asked Morrell about it, and he said, you know, there was just mistakes. You know, there are a lot of mistakes, and we've got to clean those up in order to get some wins.
Yeah. No, there's no doubt that defensively they're really struggling right now, and they're really struggling to get off the field, mm-hmm, on third down. I mean, mm-hmm, that is a huge point of emphasis.
Was looking it up, 9 of 14 Arizona State?
I think so, but I looked up the stat. Third down defense right now, they're 125th in the country.
And there's, what, 130?
You know what? Who's right behind them, though? Interestingly enough,
Arizona?
Oregon.
Oh, Oregon.
Yeah, which is kind of crazy. But, you know, I'm sure Washington would love to trade records with Oregon
right now. Yeah.
But it was interesting with Coach DeBoer, because he still feels like everything is going the right way. They're doing the right things. The habits are really starting to take root, and the process, they're not deviating from the process. And if they keep doing that, the results are going to come. So much like Coach Pete, he's kind of an inside-out guy. He's a process guy, and the results will be a part of that process, as opposed to other coaches that we've seen in the past where the result is the end, and you have to figure out how to get that result. Mm-hmm. That method, the latter, usually is not as effective or successful in the long term. So he feels really good about that. He also just liked, in general, the response that the team had coming back. And like you said, Scott, it went from hurt from the UCLA game to really pissed off. I mean, has been kind of the operative term that I've heard used this week. And so we'll see. I mean, a lot of talking to the coaches and players, they feel pretty confident you're going to see a different Washington team out there this weekend against Arizona. I kind of wonder how much of that is also going to come to the home cooking.
Yeah.
The fact that they're finally going to get home,
yep,
they're going to be playing on turf, which they're used to. They're going to be playing with normal temperatures, which is something that they're also used to as well. So we'll see.
You were down there at Arizona State. It wasn't that bad, was it?
No, it was warm. It was definitely warm, but it wasn't so crazy that...
was it any warmer than the Portland State... Or, I'm sorry, not Portland State. The Portland State game or the...
I don't think
or
so.
The Kent State game.
Yeah, I don't think so. It just what was interesting though is that Washington ended up playing over 90 snaps on offense. So we were talking about this, Kim and I, post game after the ASU game, wondering if the offense started to suffer a little bit.
Yeah.
Ironically enough, because they were running more plays, because the defense I think only ended up having to defend maybe less than 70 plays. Like 65 to 70 plays. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting how that kind of worked out. It was almost like could the inverse have been a problem? By the way, that's how close we are to the basketball court right now.
Yeah.
But you know, what else did you take from Coach Morrell and Coach Grubb when they kind of broke down the ASU tape earlier in the week?
Yeah, I thought Coach Morrell was pretty interesting to listen to about when he was talking about, you know, having the four plays in positive territory and losing it on downs in the second half, and that wasn't the one that they turned it over at their own 29. That was a different one. But you know, and on that one, you know, he just talked a lot about that. Hey, we got to execute. We've got to execute better. We had guys open on some of those plays, and we just missed them.
Yeah.
And he also talked about Dylan Morris coming in for one throw. I mean, can you imagine coming in cold off the bench? You're trying to lead your team back, and now Dylan Morris has to get up and what was it, second and 10 or third? And I think it was second. No, because they got the penalty for the targeting.
Well,
so it was
I just remember
10.
He had one throw.
Yeah,
and he made it perfect. Throw.
Yeah, to Jalen McMillan, right? Yeah, and
you know
and,
who it kind of honestly reminded me of? It reminded me of Cody Pickett in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, 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 a little bit. So, you know, he
hey, Coach.
Yeah, that was
good,
Coach DeBoer. So, anyway, the way that the players were responding to things and that they missed some opportunities, he said we had opportunities to make plays on those and we just didn't do it.
Yeah.
And he goes, sometimes that's on me, sometimes that's on the player, sometimes that's just on the situation.
Right.
You know, sometimes you just miss guys. There's just no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And he felt Michael Penix, you know, I think they were all surprised to see. I got this from DeBoer and from Grubb that they were surprised how quickly Penix bounced back from, because what I took from it was he got hit in the chest and couldn't breathe.
Right.
And
he got hit in the throat,
right up in the upper chest throat area and couldn't breathe. And you saw him on the replay. I don't know if you could, cause you were at the game, but for us at home on the replay, he was grabbing at his neck. Yeah. And so, like he couldn't breathe. And so, but it was one play and then he was right back in there. So, definitely was an interesting thing to think. And, you know, as far as Coach Morrell, I think he knows that the defense isn't playing well right now and they're making mistakes. And, this will be the seventh straight game that they have not had the same lineup in to start a game. He already said that. And Coach Brown said that to me today, Wednesday, and that this will be their seventh different lineup.
So let's just dump into that real quick.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that means Elijah Jackson's not going to be available?
It sounds like Jackson is still working his way back from whatever happened to him in the third quarter. I don't know what the injury was, but he didn't play the rest of the game.
Yeah. See, and I wish we had the lineups here so we could kind of figure it out. But I wonder if that also means that we'll get to see a reunion of Asa Turner and Alex Cook.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah, since that was the first half, he doesn't have to miss the first quarter,
or
the first half of this game. So, you know, Washington, they have the players to make these plays, and now it's just going to be about these guys playing fast and getting out there and stopping and thinking and just going out and playing. You know, I don't want to go too far into the players, but Cam Bright, when we talked to him on Tuesday, he basically said – that it has taken him a long time to figure this out because he wasn't playing weak side linebacker.
He was playing more on the outside.
The Husky.
Yeah.
He was playing the Husky. And now he's playing the Will, and he isn't playing as fast. And he said, it's taken me some time, but I'm really starting to feel like I'm getting it down. And Coach Morrell echoed that by saying he thought it was his best game.
Yep.
that he'd played since he was a Husky, and he said that on Monday. So.
Right. I also say, just moving back over to the offensive side with Coach Grubb, it looked like one of the main talking points, obviously, was the fourth down, was the little jet sweep, pop pass, whatever you want to call it, to Roma Dunze. It ended up in negative yards on fourth down. It was interesting because I want to say it was Grubb. I don't think this was Coach DeBoer, but I think it was Grubb that actually said that that was something that was on their sheet. Like, they basically look at it, and they've looked at it in terms of, does it, what are the odds? You know,
he calls it the book.
The book, and he goes, we just went to the book. And I don't know if that book is skewed more towards being aggressive in general, but I really thought that that was interesting, that they literally kind of said that they relied on their analytics for that call as opposed to just making the gut decision, because they were down at the time. It was early in the third quarter. If I remember correctly, it might have even been the first drive.
It was the very first drive, and it was the drive after Washington had forced a three and out,
right.
The only three and out they forced on Saturday.
Right, so they had a chance to really get some momentum back. Mm-hmm. And, on that far on your side of the field to make a call like that, I think on the one hand, fans are like, we love it if they're aggressive like that, but we're only going to be pleased with it if it works. And so I was kind of wondering, and I'll just ask you, because I know the coaches won't divulge the playbook, but do you think that there's a play for that Penks could call his own number on that?
Well, I think, Well, I mean,
Naked boot.
Yeah, and they Penks had said that when he handed it off, did he say it after the game? I can't remember.
I don't remember.
Maybe it was Grubb who said it on Monday. But somebody said how Penks was kind of running the other way and didn't know what had happened and something. But if you watch the replay, no one went with Penks.
Yeah.
I mean, he would have run for 30 yards before anyone.
That's why I'm saying. I'm wondering if there's a read in that, or
I think it's a straight give because of how fast it has to happen. And you need to get a yard. You can't hold it and ride the guy and read somebody. You have to just hand it off and let that guy go. Now, I still think Rome could have got it. I think he made a bad – he's not a natural running back.
Yeah.
So he doesn't – I think he could have gone up a little bit sooner than he tried. I think he tried to bow it out a little bit, and that's what allowed them to flow and make the play. But, Arizona State had it completely read. I thought. And they said, Ryan Grubb said that we had a look. We had a certain look that we wanted, and we got that look. That's why we ran that play.
Yeah.
And because I think they have two plays that they can run, and if the first one isn't one that they can run because of the alignment of the defense, then they audible to the other one.
Right.
But they didn't do that. And so they had the look they wanted. They just didn't execute the play.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because if you go to the other side of the field on defense, and we can talk a little bit about some of the other coaches here before we take a break. I just thought it was interesting because talking to Coach Schmidt, for instance, the edge coach, he really boiled it because some of the main storylines this week on the defensive side, obviously he's getting off the field on third down. It's a huge problem. But it's also the fact that teams after the Stanford game clearly were not going to allow Washington free releases and allow them to have one-on-one opportunities on the edges. They just weren't going to do that. They were going to chip. They were going to use the extra protection in the backfield. They were going to have running backs going after them. They were going to double up if they needed to. So I was just kind of curious what other things that the coaches are trying to do to scheme to maybe win that chess game and have the counter off the counter. And he says, there's always going to be some of that. But what I thought was more interesting, he goes, we just haven't won.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, we have to get back to just winning our one-on-one battles. Yep. And the rest of that takes care of itself. And I was just wondering how much of that you've seen.
Oh, I've definitely seen more of it. I was pretty confident in the way that Washington was able to run routes against zones and things like that. Michael Penix was getting enough time to pick defenses apart. And that's what he did in those first four or five games. The last two games, that hasn't been the case. And, I talked to Romo Dunze yesterday on Tuesday, and he talked about how, you know, because I said you've quietly had three straight 100-yard games,
yeah.
And he's what, up to 556 yards,
and that was like after being the one guy out of the top four receivers the first couple weeks to not have a 100-yard game.
Yeah, and so. Yeah, I mean, it's been impressive. And he said, you know, they do the typical answers of, oh, I'm just getting open, you know, just running the routes, Mike's finding me and things like that. But, you know, if you go back and watch it, and I don't have the all 22 or anything like that, but, you know, I think Washington's winning some battles, but maybe because of the way the defense is doing, maybe they're getting pressure on Mike Penix, so he isn't able to have the time to see that they're winning the battles, or maybe he isn't anticipating that being able to be won, and so he's going in a different direction or whatever. Whatever it is, Washington needs to get back. I mean, a lot. That was the other thing that we could say is that they need to get back to what they were doing before. That was what Alex Cook said. They need to get that hunger back that they had in the offseason and in spring ball when they were out to prove that they are not the 4-8 team that they were last year. And he said, I think you're going to see that this weekend. We're going to get back to that. We've had a meeting where we were just going to talk about we need to get back to that hunger and that drive that we had. And I think the coaches know that there were some plays that they made in the first four games that they are not making now.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Moving to the players, we talked to Braylon Trice, we talked to
Cam Bright,
Alex Cook,
Cam Davis.
Also talked to Cameron Davis, which was a really good conversation. And then who else? There was one other player. I can't remember.
I did Alex Cook. You did. There was three. And I'm drawing a blank on the Romo Dunsey.
We'll figure
Romo
it out. Dunsey. Yeah. So a couple of the wideouts, and then obviously a couple of the front mm-hmm. seven guys. It seemed unanimous, though, that this idea that you're going to see a different Washington team this weekend seemed to be the main talking point.
Mm-hmm. And Alex Cook basically said it, you know, because someone asked him about playing Jaden Delara, you know, and after what Jaden Delara did last year for Washington State, first of all, against the team, but then also planting old Crimson right at midfield, which I still find funny trying to plant a flag on a AstroTurf, you know, field, but whatever.
It is an interesting aside, though. It's one thing that we haven't really talked about because with the new staff mm-hmm. and kind of this new look team, we haven't really talked about the idea of an old wound coming back. And obviously that would be more affecting on the players than the coaches.
And Alex said, he goes, I'm not forgetting that, what he did. And I know no guy on this team that was here last year is going to forget that, and we're making sure all of the players that weren't here know what happened last year. And so he said,
I wonder if they show him tape.
Yeah, he said, well, basically he said, you know, Alex said, hey, we're not going to go out and take cheap shots at him or dirty hits or anything like that, but he says there's going to be a different intensity when we come out there and play them.
Yeah.
It's a lot different than what we've seen this first 4 weeks or first 5 weeks or 6 weeks.
It is interesting, though, because when I asked Braylon Trice, because Braylon Trice is going to be one of the guys that's going to be tasked to stopping Jaden Delora at the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. And I asked him if he reminds him of anybody because, you know, Kent State had one of those guys. Yep. Portland State had one of those guys. He just saw DTR.
The only one they Emory haven't Jones. Had that has been mobile is Tanner McKee.
Well, and yeah, and I guess. And
Bourget yesterday.
A little, yeah, against Arizona State to a lesser extent. And then the Michigan State quarterback wasn't.
He can run. He could run, but he probably
he didn't really choose to run all that much. But the point being is they've seen a lot of different types. And Trice is just like I don't do that. I don't try to compare him to guys. Each guy's unique and whatnot. But I wonder now that you've mentioned it. I hadn't really thought about it all week, but now that you've mentioned what happened in the Apple Cup, I really wonder if that's just their way mm-hmm. of not giving him anything to glom onto.
Well,
and because not that he would need bulletin board material, not that any of these mm-hmm. guys do, but the simple fact is. I wonder if they're just kind of keeping their powder dry, so to speak, and just yep. kind of letting their play do the talking on Saturday.
Well, you'd hope so. You know, but Alex Cook is one of the captains.
Yeah.
And he mentioned it. So, you know, if the word is that they don't want to give this guy something in public,
yeah.
they've given it already.
Yeah.
And they gave it in the story. Go back and look at the story that yeah. I posted. You know, I mean, he was really forthright. He wasn't angry about it, I don't think. I think it just he thought it was disrespectful. He said, we were a 4-8 team. We were battered and bruised, and you're going to go do that? What he didn't seem to remember was that Washington had beat them for 8 straight years.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was a big win for Washington State last year.
Yeah.
And kind of, I mean, let's be honest, any win over Washington – for Washington State yeah. is a big win because sure. it's what 76-34 or something.
Oh, it's almost double.
Yeah,
it's not
I mean,
good.
It's ridiculous whatever the number is and so, you know, I mean, I don't but Alex Cook wasn't around for those. So,
yeah.
you know, so he doesn't know all that stuff. I mean, he even asked us how many times have we played?
Yeah.
I don't know, but you know, I think the players, the ones who were here last year, they're not going to take dirty cheap shots at him or anything like that, but he's going to get the best of that defense, I think.
Yeah, the motivation is there.
The defense is going to give it their best to shut him down. Yeah. He's throwing for more yards than Penix is, I think. He's had a 450-yard game.
Oh, you mean in a single game? Probably, yeah.
But he might be throwing for pretty close to more than Penix has per game. I mean, they're throwing the ball around so much. And so, you know, this guy is a good thrower, but he will make mistakes. So,
Well, what's interesting, in talking to some of the coaches too this week, they get the sense that he is a guy that you can't take the stinger away from him because he will hold on to the ball to try to make a play. And they've been so good on third downs, Arizona, in part because he's been able to extend plays and make things happen.
Mm-hmm.
What you have to do if you're Washington, in my opinion, is you've got to make him pay for that. You've got to make him pay for holding on to the ball too long. You've got to make him start to go backwards instead of to the side or through the pocket. And so I'm sure that they're trying to do everything they can to figure out how to stop him. I'm wondering if you look, and I asked some of the players this week about this, whether, you know, is it just as easy as going, okay, we know Oregon just beat them badly, and they had a certain way of doing it, whether it was just being super aggressive at the line, whether it was mixing up their man and zone coverages to give Delora different pictures to confuse him. And Coach Schmidt this week talked about that, how they're trying to do different things where they will drop back their edges in coverage. We saw it with ZTF in that potential targeting call against ASU. Mm-hmm. He was out covering a guy in a flat. You don't see that very often with him. So they're trying to give the quarterbacks different looks so that they're not static. What I'm wondering is it just as easy for a team like Washington and their coaches to look at that Oregon game plan and go, okay, well, that was a very successful game plan against Delora, and it was in their house. If we can kind of mimic some of the things that Oregon did, and we can do it in our house where we have the benefit of the crowd, is that the way you go about it?
Yeah, and it was kind of the way Washington was with Washington State, right? When Mike Leach was the head coach of Washington State, Washington had their number,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, Jimmy Lake certainly made no bones about the fact that he was very eager to take on Washington State.
Yeah, and Pete Kwiatkowski And Jimmy Lake, basically the way they designed their defense was to shut down teams like Washington State. And they did a really good job of doing that. But if you watch the rest of Washington State's games, no one seemed to do what Washington did. And you got to wonder, why aren't teams just following the blueprint, you know? And I think some of it's the players. Some of it's where's our strength lie, you know? Some of it is I don't think we can get it done. Some of it is we tried to do it and it didn't work because our guys didn't get – because the biggest thing with Washington State was you had to get jams on their receivers, get them off their schedule, because that's a timing – that's a timing offense, and like most offenses are. But Washington is going to have to figure out how to stop offenses from running right down the field on them. And some of that's going to have to be aggressiveness at the corner spots to really get guys off their routes. And Arizona used to have a lot of big wide receivers, and they still have a couple big ones. But is it Cowling?
Cowling, yeah.
He's not very big.
No, he's not at all. Yeah. But Totoro McMillan is.
Yeah. Tutoria.
He's like 6'5".
Yeah, so you got to play him differently, but I just think Washington needs to be more physical than they have been at the corner spots. They're getting too many free releases. Elijah Badger, you know, he's not a great receiver. I mean, he's okay, but he's not a all-star or anything like that. And he ran circles around the Husky defensive backs. Now, some of that was because they had relatively inexperienced defensive backs out there. But I'm sorry, it just shouldn't be happening. Right. And Jordan Perryman's big enough and experienced enough to be a good jam corner and really get on guys, shut down guys. And we haven't seen that yet. And they cannot let Cowling get free. They just can't.
Right. And I would also add to that, too, that I think part of the reason why you saw Oregon be super, super aggressive at the line is because they understood that if they sat back and they played in a zone or if they played in a softer man with more free releases and things like that, those guys are as good a group in general. Mm-hmm. Where I'm talking about Arizona's receivers. Yeah. They're as good as any receiver group in the conference. And I would argue they're probably going to be the best receiver group Washington's faced so far this year. And so what you have to do is you have to get Delora off his spot. One of the things that the players and the coaches have talked about in terms of why there's only been one combined sack the last two games for Washington's defense is because the quarterbacks are getting rid of the ball so quickly. I think, to be honest with you, getting rid of the ball quickly should actually really benefit Washington in this particular case, because what that would mean is you would hope that what you're talking about, things like Cowing, maybe they only get 5 yards instead of turning it into an explosive. Mm-hmm. And Coach Schmidt really, really hammered that point home. He goes, hey, we have to obviously do a better job of winning our one-on-ones. We've got to win at the line of scrimmage. We've got to take him off his spot. We've got to pressure him. We've got to get him going backwards. But just as importantly, when they do their little 5-yard hitches or they do their little screens and they're doing those things on the edge, we got to get guys down to the ground right there and then so that we can start getting more third, six, seven, eights, third and longs as opposed to third and one, third and two. And I will let people know it's very, very interesting how they were able to clean up the tackling from the UCLA game.
I thought they did tackle much better.
Where the Pro Football Focus grade, if I remember correctly, for their overall tackling on defense was less than 60. The Pro Football Focus grade for their tackling against Arizona State in a loss was 90. Mm-hmm. So you can't blame them for missing a tackle or two here in key moments, because for the most part, when they had their hands on them, they were getting them to the ground. The only problem is that they didn't get their hands on them until 10, 15, 20 yards down the line of scrimmage.
What I'm going to be interested to see is, and what I think people, and I get the frustrations, I get it, you know, watching the team get gashed when we haven't been used to that in so many years. But one of the things that's going to be interesting is, what does this defense look like 6 games from now or 7 weeks from now, you know, at the end of the season? Does it look like these guys have, okay, the switch came on, and they were able to make some plays that they weren't making earlier in the year. And I think the 4 home games, the lesser opponents that they played, Kent State and Portland State at least, you know, I think that kind of covered up some of the maybe mistakes that these guys made, but they had the talent to you know, go and make the play eventually. But against some of these better teams, they're not able to do that, and more talented teams. And so, you know, we saw what UCLA did to Utah last weekend. That was
apparently UCLA's okay.
Yeah, I think I think they're going to do that to some teams this year. Now, what's going to be real interesting is can they maintain this, you know, and everything like that. But, man, they look like a pretty good team. I mean, honestly, they look better than USC has. Yeah. And USC is the one on everybody's mind because they're USC. But UCLA has looked like the best team in the conference, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, but, Liberty Bell game is actually going to be relevant nationally for the first time in I can't remember how long.
What's going to be real interesting is seeing what Arizona State does from here. You know, is Emory Jones going to come back?
Sounds like he was practicing this week. So
yeah,
we'll see.
So but I mean, that defense played a little bit better. That offense played. I mean, Washington still made their yards, but that offense was really tough to stop. And they were tough to stop against USC.
Right.
USC had struggles with them.
Yeah, in the first half for that USC game, ASU was really, really good, and that's where I was really kind of confused looking at the statistics going into the ASU game was the fact that you looked at their quarter, you looked at Emory Jones, you looked at X Valade, you looked at Badger, and you saw guys that statistically were getting it done. You watched them on tape against USC, they were making plays. Why was this team so bad on the field when on paper they didn't look anywhere near that bad? And so, you know, I was always kind of just really confused going into that game, and I guess it showed on Saturday, that confusion.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The last thing I want to talk about in terms of main storylines, and we talked to the coaches and the players both about this, just talked to Coach Huff this week specifically about it, is everyone wants to know about that move of Troy Fautanu staying at tackle and moving Jackson Kirkland inside. You know, on paper, again, we're on the outside looking in, Scott. We're never privy to the details and the position meetings and
really
things like that.
I really wish they would let us in those meetings.
Wouldn't that be amazing? Yeah. We could give some guys some real scoop.
We would be a lot busier than we are now, though.
The super dog tails would be...
We're busy, but...
Yeah, the super dog tails would be off the charts.
Super dog tails,
But the point being is that I wonder how they feel about it and how well it's going. And really talking to Scott Huff, he says people still have to be patient with Jackson because he's still just coming back into just football shape. Not in terms of just playing the game and learning the left guard position and the nuances and all that and playing in between players instead of being on the edge and all that stuff. They just need to remember that this is still his second or third game back. He's still getting back into football.
Well, Scott had said he's only worked like 2.5-3 weeks, really, and practiced. And so, I mean, he's really at game two.
Yeah.
You know, obviously he's only played two games. But, I mean, realistically, from a practice standpoint, he's barely at game two.
Yeah.
And, you know, what will be interesting is to see – how that, because I'll tell you what, they made two of their biggest runs, the one that Richard Newton did and the one that Cam Davis had, were both off of the left side.
They were, yes. And I was going to say, too, what I find interesting about this particular matchup when looking specifically at Washington's run offense against Arizona's run defense, if you can get at Arizona, and Oregon showed it. Now, Oregon has the best offensive line, I think people understand, probably in the Pac-12. And maybe one of even the best nationally. They gave the blueprint on how to really control the tempo, control the ball, put up points on the board against Arizona, and that's starting with the ground game. Now that sounds cliche because everyone says you got to have a run game and you got to stop the run in order to win. That's fair enough, but if you really look at the numbers and break them down, Arizona's run defense is just not great. And so
and the same with Arizona State's, theirs wasn't very good either.
But that's the problem. The problem is the last couple weeks, what defenses have done is that they've tried to take away the deep shot. So they were somewhat effective with the deep shot, Washington against UCLA, like that first touchdown, for instance, on fourth down.
That was just Rome winning one-on-one.
And again, that's what you have to do sometimes. But they didn't complete anything down the field against Arizona State. Arizona State was bound and determined, and they had not shown that until that game, which was really weird. Yeah. It was just strange, a strange part of that game. What they have to do is get back. It's not that they didn't try. Washington absolutely was taking their shots. And I think with Ryan Grubb, they always will. But they have to be effective at least once or twice to extend the offense and to get things going. And so I think the way they have to do that, obviously, is through the ground game. And that's why I think having Jackson Kirkland inside, going back to this original discussion, I think having him in there is going to be so huge. Because, like, as you said, Scott, not only were the best runs against Arizona State on that side, but now you're going up against a team that looks like they can be had on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree with you on that. And one real quick thing I wanted to add to what we were talking, what you're talking about, on Monday, Ryan Grubb was asked, "Have you ever scored 38 points and had no touchdown passes?" Yeah. Okay, and he kind of laughed and goes, "No. You would think that at least one would have been that way, but no, it wasn't the case." Think about this, Chris. What? Oregon scored 49 points, 43. It was 43.
It was low 40s.
Yeah,
I think.
43 points, no touchdown passes.
Yeah.
7 touchdown runs in that game. 3 were by Bo Nix.
Yeah.
Okay. But we had 3 from, UW had 3 from Cam Davis.
The last 3 touchdowns were all Cam Davis runs.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I just think about it and I'm like, you're talking about a place where Washington is going to need, if possible, Richard Newton, if he's back from the possible concussion or wooziness, whatever he had. Cam Davis sounds like he's 100% ready to go. Wayne Talapapa sounds like he's ready to go. Will Nixon, hopefully you can get him incorporated a little bit. Maybe Sam Adams a little bit. Hey, we haven't seen Dumas yet either. Aaron Dumas hasn't played at all.
Yeah.
And JV on Sunday. Now, granted, they might not be in the mix anymore. I don't know what the deal is with them. But whatever the case, Washington does need to establish the run against this team. And I think you can establish the run, get them to get those linebackers start creeping up, and then that's when you start hitting those intermediate passes over the middle for they go for a 15-yard pass, and then they can run for 15 or 20 yards.
Yep.
And I think that's really going to be the big key. And, yes, I think Troy Fautanu at left tackle and Jackson Kirkland at left guard I think has been a huge help to Washington's running game.
Yeah, I think my final thoughts, just based on the talks with the coaches and the players this week, is that, first of all, getting home is huge for this team. They need to be in front of the friendly faces, playing on turf, playing at a reasonable temp. Whether that was a factor or not, whatever, it's past now. They just need to get back to playing in their normal environment. And I think that's going to be huge for them, and I think that's going to be huge for them psychologically just to kind of get back in the swing of things, because they just need to enjoy some success in that way, playing in front of their home fans. I also think, honestly, the way that they've been talking a good game this week, and I think it's important when they say there's going to be a reaction, that they're going to be a different team. Those types of things. Those are the things you want to hear. Now, we all know talk is cheap. You got to prove it on the field. And after the first series or so, all those things we talked about with Jaden Delora and planting the flag and all that stuff's going to go away. So it's just going to be about winning your battles one-on-one. I talked to Eric Schmidt this week about, you know, knowing that there's going to be probably 7 different DB combinations the first 7 weeks. Does that psychologically put extra stress on your guys to feel like they've got to do more to affect the game up front to help their guys in the back? And he goes, you know, it's all symbiotic. It's everybody affects everything else. It's a holistic approach. But at the same time, you can't go outside what you're supposed to do. You do your 1/11th is what they call it. You do your 1/11th. The guy next to you does his 1/11th. And as long as everyone's doing their job, then they'll be good to go. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see how it goes, but I think at least the reaction has been good. The talk has been good. They've been saying the right things. We'll see if they do the right things on Saturday. What are your final thoughts?
Final thoughts are just, you know, this team has the ability to get back on in the winners column. And I still think before the season I said they were a 7-5, 8-4 team. I still feel that way. I think if things break right, they could go 9-3 by the end of the season. Heck, they could even go 10-2 if things really, really break right for them. But, you know, the defense obviously has to be fixed. They've got to be able to get stops, get off the field. The coaches know this. The players know this. This isn't rocket surgery, Chris. It's just they've got to figure out different ways. I think you've got a lot of young guys playing. I think you've got a lot of guys who still need to get more seasoning and experience. But, you know, Coach Brown said it today, that all of our freshmen are not freshmen anymore. They played 6 games now. You know, they can't be freshmen anymore. And I understand that thinking, that, hey, there's no more excuses. There's no excuses.
Next man up.
We got to get it done. That still doesn't take away from the reality that these guys are going to be thrown, stuff is going to be thrown at them that they've never seen before, whereas a fifth-year senior might have already seen it. So I'm not giving them an excuse. I'm just saying there are reasons why things happen. And this team needs to figure out a way to get stops. Offensively, I'm not worried about them. I mean, that bad snap aside and maybe the failed fourth down aside, I don't have any problem with what Washington's doing on offense. They're doing enough to win games. Yeah. It's defensively where they need to make plays. They need to get at least one more or two more stops. Get one or two more stops in a game than they've gotten the last two games, they win both of those games.
Yeah.
So, again, not rocket science, not rocket surgery, whatever you want to say it is, but it's just – you know, if people like you and I can figure this out, the coaches have had that figured out for a long time. Now they got to figure out how to get it done.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be the biggest key.
Well, I'm sure they figured it out, but have they over-figured it out?
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes
you can overthink, yeah.
Paralysis by analysis.
You can overthink it, yep.
So a couple of housekeeping items before we go. Basketball practice starting, so we're going to wrap this up.
This is the women's team, too,
yeah,
by the way.
First of all, just to make sure people understand, Kim will be with us for our pregame show. So we will have our pre-Arizona game show Saturday morning, so look out for that. Also, if you want to get our daily updates, the stories, breaking stuff, all that stuff that goes on, you can get it in your email. Just send an email to us at huskystadium@gmail.com. Again, huskystadium@gmail.com, subject line newsletter, and we will get our digest sent out to you. We put it out at least once a day, more often a couple times a day. And then, we'll be back with you on Saturday morning to break down all the main storylines. Again, there might be some things going on in the next 48 hours that we'll need to bring you up to speed on and talk again about Washington's next opponent, the Arizona Wildcats, 2:30 game time on Pac-12 networks. And so we'll be there.
And Cal is set for?
7:30 start on ESPN. And so Kim will be down there for that as well. And then he'll be staying in the Bay for Pac-12 media day for men's basketball.
And women's basketball, too. I think it's the same day. The other thing is, too, from people wondering, because the Mariners game first pitch is like at 1:05 or 1:07 on that day or whatever it is, and the Husky game kicks off about 2:30.
On Saturday.
Seahawks game or the Husky game kicks off at 2:30, 2:40, somewhere in that range. We have heard a rumor that they're going to put the Mariners game on the Jumbotron pregame. So we don't know that, but that's what they said.
Well, and I've already put it on the board for those people that are wondering about the timing of all these things. Don't be surprised if you get spoilers.
Yeah.
And whether they literally put the game up or whether they're just giving updates on the PA,
you're going to get it.
Yeah. If you're DVR in the game and you don't want to know, you may want to wait until, like, literally 5 minutes before game time to show up.
And I'm going
to
be honest with you. I don't know how you do that. Yeah. I'm so antsy on stuff like that. I've got to look it up.
Yeah,
so.
And it's... Yeah.
I can't just DVR and not watch.
Well, and it's not like Seattle sports fans aren't already on edge with what just happened down in Houston. So we'll leave that alone. Yeah. We won't talk about that. But for Scott Eklund, this is Chris Fetters of Dogman.com. We'll see you on Saturday. Go Dogs.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top 5 leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.